Well, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to talk to you. It was, last time I spent time here was when KICP was still at Ellison Hall, so and I was postdoctoral, so it's pleasure to be back. This is, work done on the Condo Lattice model together with Mark Stenhoff. And it really is a, it's going to be not so very much really about the Condo Lattice model, but really more about a new way of looking at these highly correlated dense electron problems that I think could be a useful complement to other methods that's around. So, but I will use it, I would use a Condo Lattice model and periodic Anderson model as a vehicle for presenting these methods. So I'll first discuss the Condo Lattice model, and then I'm going to look at these nonlinear canonical transformations on even valence systems, and then I'll, if there's time, I'll look at generalizations to odd valence insulators also. So first of all, let me just begin by saying, nonlinear canonical transformations, of course, quantum mechanics is all linear operators. So there's nothing nonlinear in terms of operators, but they will be nonlinear combinations of electron operators that I'm going to be looking at. So the Condo lattice, we start with a caricature here. It's just a layer of conducting electrons, and that's H0. And on top of that, we put down some lower level of spins. And I'm going to take that, I'm going to populate them with electrons rather than pure spins for purpose of generalization. Here, it's coupled together with a spin exchange. And then here, there's a term that that forces it to be one electron per site. So, of course, there are other states here that include only zero or two electrons per site at the bottom, but we don't include that. Anyway, I wanted to allow generalization of this to include the periodic Anderson model. So this is the kind of system that we're going to be looking at. So the Condo lattice model, then, the important physics is that the lower levels is basically has a spin degree of freedom, and then there's an electron that's allowed to hop from one site to the next. And so the process looks like this, where this electron now that I've noted in black is going to hop to the right. So that's one hopping process. Now, these pictograms are going to occur all over this talk, and basically the black ones here are for reasons that I hope become clear later, I'm going to do particle hole transformation on the bottom. So basically here, these little white dots are holes, and then the black ones are electrons. So you can count the number of electrons by how much is shaded. So here we have our Condo lattice model in its full. Okay, so the analysis that's usually been done, and to some extent is more difficult, is the weak coupling J equals zero limit, which I'm not going to discuss very much. And the weak coupling limit, well, we've got our band here, and then we've got a bunch of levels here for J equals zero, huge degeneracy, and then when you turn on J a little bit, the gap opens up, and in that case, you have spin exchange that's induced between neighboring sites. So that gives you an antiferromagnet. And well, that's a very interesting problem, but not one that I'm going to address, particularly because I'm going to look at the opposite limit, where J is very large and T is small. So in the strong coupling limit, it's really very different. And if we look at J much larger than T, in fact, if we take T0, there is a local ground state, which is a singlet. The singlet has a gap to charge excitations. So therefore, if you turn on a little bit of T, you're going to get a gap to the first excited state, so the system will remain an insulator. And that's the system that we're going to be looking at. The caricature then for the caricature of the ground state is a bunch of different singlets on different sites, a couple. So that's the strong coupling limit, a bunch of singlets where electrons can now hop from one site to the next. Okay, so to keep things fairly, to be able to look at the whole set of Hamiltonians that I'll be interested in, well, it's really, I can generalize from a Kondo to a periodic Anderson model, where there's a d electron that's sitting here deep in energy. It's got some sort of on-site potential. Then there's an interaction U, which allows, which prefers that it only be singly occupied. And then the electron or hole can hop between this and the conduction piece. So that's the periodic Anderson model, which has a lot of properties very similar to the Kondo lattice model.
So you now consider situation with number of electrons in the number of spins?
The number of electrons total is 2 per site, and the electrons are spinful. Was that your question?
Yeah, number of electrons and electrons is equal to number of spins.
Yeah. The number of, no, the total, the conduction electron each have a spin, and the d electron each have a spin. So 2 spinful electrons per site.
The number is equal.
Yeah. On average. Okay, so let's look at the Gram state, singular. And now we're going to look at a really trivial problem, which is a single site. And we're going to ask the question if we can create a local quasi-particle operator which creates an electron or hole on a singlet site. Okay, so we want to know if we can, how we can define a quasi-particle in the decoupled limit. So let's just review what would, so the quasi-particle would essentially be the particle that moves an electron from one site, empties it from here, puts it on the next site. So we want to create a hole here and move the particle over there. So the quasi-particle that I'll put a hat on requires that the quasi-particle destruction operator on the ground state should annihilate the state. We also require that the conjugate operator, which is the creation of the quasi-particle, followed by the destruction operator, should leave the ground state alone. That's what we demand out of a set of canonical fermions. So let's just see how that works. And let's just take a look at how a single electron operator might fulfill those, or to what extent it might fulfill those conditions. So the first, let's just check the naive bare electron operator that takes an electron and just kills it from the site. Well, that operator is the destruction operator of the conduction electron. Let it act on the singlet, and well, you don't get zero left. You get an electron left in the lower state. So that doesn't work at all. The second issue is if the construction operator, creation operator, followed by the annihilation operator, should give you the ground state back again. Well, that one doesn't work. You want this condition to be true. Well, it doesn't work either. It just gives you projection back onto the ground state, and it's not the right operator either. So even in that completely trivial case of having decoupled sites, a single electron operator really does a terrible job of acting as a quasi-particle. So what can we do about that? So let's in order to do that, let me just ease into it, and I'm going to switch now problems completely and look at a simple Anderson impurity. Let me take a look at the Anderson impurity and make a complete listing of all the 16 sites. And I'm going to plot the energy for this particular value, for these values of the chemical potential here, U, and the interaction, or the hopping. Here's a plot of all of the 16 states that are present. Here's the ground state, which is a singlet. Then we have a couple of triply occupied doublet at low energy, a triply occupied doublet at high energy. Here's a triplet, There are three total of three singlets, depending on how we rearrange these electrons. And here's the vacuum. So this is an energy diagram of this particular Hamiltonian. I forget now exactly what parameters are used, but for U and V, you get a diagram like this, where the energy is plotted vertically against the number of electrons on the horizontal axis. So that's a diagram for the Anderson impurity. And the important thing is that the ground state is down here and shown by this picture here. And, well, here are the other states. Here are two holes here. Here's the conduction electron. Electron has been lifted out of the deep line state, so that gives you a rather very unfavorable one particle state here. And each of them have a little assignment like this. I think you get the picture. Okay, so let's now switch to a different Fermi system. Put the Anderson impurity aside and look at a simple Fermi system, again on one side, with two flavors of particles, A, that I'll call A and B. And I'm going to look at a simple Hamiltonian, which is there's a chemical potential of 1. And then there's a difference in the chemical potential of 1/12 between NA and NB. And then there's this, there's an interaction term where the spin of S on of A interacts with the spin of B with a Heisenberg term. Okay, so that's a simple, straightforward Hilbert space is 16-dimensional, and we just diagonalize it. Okay, well, here's a diagram of that. Here we have a vacuum, n equals 0 particles. Then we have two doublets that are sitting close to each other, but different. They differ by 1/12 in their energy here. Now we have a triplet, and we have the rest of the 16 states in this diagram here, energy versus number of particles. Okay, well, this system has a ground state, which is a vacuum. And we know how to deal with vacuum rather well because we know how to create creation and annihilation operator based on simple electron operators. So let's compare. So now I'm going to take and choose a particular value of these parameters just for the sake of argument. And V is going to be 2, U is 8, and that symmetrizes the periodic Anderson model like this. If we then compare these two Hamiltonians, V equals 2, U equals 8, it's not exactly symmetric. E is 1/2 U. If we compare these two models, we find that the energy spectrum is exactly the same. Okay, so this dilute Fermi gas has here are these two states have the same energy as here, these two states have the same energy here. So there's an exact one-to-one correspondence between this system of fermions where the vacuum is a ground state to this system of fermions where the singlet is a ground state. Okay, so there's a permutation in this 16-dimensional Hilbert space then that maps the two spectrums onto each other. And a permutation is a canonical transformation. So we then have a canonical transformation then in principle that can take us from a system where the ground state is a singlet and has two electrons to a system where the ground state is a vacuum. And the idea is then to explore that canonical transformation. Okay, so here's the pictogram then of the interacting of the Anderson impurity. We've got our singlet down here, we've got one electron here, in other words, one hole. Here we've got three electrons. Here we've got completely filled. Here we have the vacuum. Here's basically the triplet then, and the singlet is baked into one site here. And here's a picture then of the 16 states with energy as a function of particle number. This is the Anderson impurity. Picture of the weakly interacting system where the vacuum is the ground state is here. So if we compare these two, we find then that there's a permutation. We want to map the vacuum into the singlet. We want to map this single particle state into the one hole state. And we want to map all of these have their own place in each of these diagrams. So this state maps into here. And that specifies a permutation that will map the singlet into a vacuum. Okay, so a permutation is a canonical transformation, and the canonical transformation is a unitary operator. The unitary operator can be represented as a polynomial in creation and annihilation operators, because the space of 16 by 16 matrices is covered by all the polynomial operations on these creation and annihilation operators. And so the idea is that we now create a mapping from our quasi-particles, which I'll put a hat on, so that the mapping, so that we have a mapping of the quasi-particles to the C electrons, the electron quasi-particles to the C electrons, and we have a mapping of the whole quasi-particles to the D electrons. And this transformation can be done exactly with computer algebra. It's a mess, but Mathematica handles this with ease, and the permutation looks like this. The new creation operator is written in terms of linear combination of whole operators together with nonlinear terms, and electron creation operator, a bunch of nonlinear terms, and these are all nonlinear pieces, and then there's a linear piece here, which is a Bogoliubov kind of looking piece with a linear combination of electron and holes. But all of these others, and there's more stuff that I've written down here, are all necessary for them to be a canonical transformation. So this permutation can be done exactly. And here's the Bogoliubov piece. And it's also, we can note that I call them F, but the D electrons is given in terms of completely nonlinear operators of the electron and holes. There is no Bogoliubov-like term. So it's a polynomial that starts with third power of the creation annihilation operators. Okay, so we've solved by brute force the problem of mapping the bare electrons that are in the F, that are in the D and D band and conduction band, to a set of electron and hole quasi-particles that by construction do exactly what we want to do, which is that the electron operator exactly and moves us from the state of the singlet to the state where we have one conduction electron extra. And so what we can do is we take this rather awful canonical transformation, again with computer algebra, we stuff it into the Condo lattice model, and out comes a new model in terms of electrons and holes where the vacuum is the ground state. Okay, so what we've got is the Condo lattice model. It used to be naively simple in the sense that it was simple to write down. It was still an interacting model. Here, it is naively a mess because we have all kinds of terms, all possible permitted terms. However, we have a diagonal piece here, which is 3 times J times the number of electrons. So we have a linear piece here. And the hopping piece becomes also a mess. We take the creation annihilation operator and replace them by this awful mess in the hopping. And then we get a terrible looking Hamiltonian. Okay, so the original Honda lattice model, after this, becomes a big mess with the new particle, quasi-particle, hole, and electron operators. However, it's a mess, but it has one important difference with the original model, and that is that in the limit where T is small, it is a dilute Fermi gas. It used to be a dense Fermi gas where you have 2 electrons per site. Now you have a dilute Fermi gas where as T becomes small, the number of quasiparticles vanishes. So in the limit where T is small or J is large, it is reasonable to simply normal order the mess that you've got here and then toss out to first approximation all the terms that are quadratic, or that are higher than quadratic, or quartic, et cetera. And so what you get is a dilute Fermi gas. You get an exactly solvable model, which is free, that you can work with.
And the quartic terms higher order in T?
All the terms are linear in T, but we're expanding in density. So we've got T, so we've got the Bogoliubov piece, and then we have T coupled, we have correlated hopping, etc. All that stuff disappears, but in this case it's valid to toss them out if we're looking at the small T limit, whereas it wasn't before.
Yeah, I guess I could think about if I took the expectation value of that quartic piece, it would go like order T.
Exactly, yeah. And that gives you an expansion, that gives you control over the expansion. Okay, so now we've got a new effective Honda lattice model where we've truncated it. So the Hamiltonian is approximate, but the transformation is exact. So all of these, now that we have a quartic Hamiltonian, we can actually compute all the correlations functions between the bare electrons, and there will be non-trivial pieces that come in because the bare electrons are composite operators of the particles and holes. So what used to be a simple C dagger C correlation becomes actually a mess, but it is computable. Yeah.
You have 3 parameters here. In order to do this, you only require T small. Do you have other requirements?
No. Well, T is small. I have J and U. In this case, U is really supposed to be a projection operator. So the Kondo lattice model is just T and J, and U disappears. U disappears from the problem. However, measuring this quantity, it should be zero. Measuring this quantity in our ensemble now in the approximate Hamiltonian will give us an idea of how well we have represented the original Hamiltonian. Yeah?
If you truncate the effective KLM,
yes,
and transform back,
yeah,
using your transformation,
well, then you get an exactly solvable, messy, Kondo lattice type model.
What do you get?
Well, we can do it. I haven't done it. But you get some a priori...
No, you know it.
Yeah, I can do it. There's no problem.
Is it in the original language anything reasonable?
Well, it's something permitted by symmetries. I haven't violated any symmetries. And it is a naively untractable Hamiltonian, which by the proper transformation can be solved analytically.
So it would be interesting to see what this.
I think it would be lovely. Yeah, but so okay. So that's exactly the question I asked myself, but I haven't. I've got distracted on other problems. Yeah.
Sorry, you said you didn't violate any symmetry, but you haven't broken issue 2 symmetry somewhere?
No.
With a truncation?
No. Oh, no, no. The truncation is the truncation preserves symmetry order by order. Okay, so we can compute, now if we want to look at the original condo lattice model, we can compute the expectation value of the ground state. We can compute the expectation value of the condo lattice model in the ground state of this new Hamiltonian, and we find that the ground state energies are accurate to T over J to the fourth, which is basically because it's a density expansion, and the density goes like T over J squared, and then density squared goes like T over J to the fourth. So we've also been able to compare this with series expansions in T over J and validate that the first corrections are in order T over J to the fourth, which means that when T over J is 0.1, we have reliable results that are reliable to 10 to the minus fourth energy. And we can compute the expectation value analytically because we can use the Wicks theorem to decompose all of the complex correlations that are induced by the canonical transformations. Okay, so we can compute spectrum spectral weights in the spectrum. And so we compute using the exact transformation, but the slightly the inexact Hamiltonian. Now, so we have a ground state here. We have a gap at large at small t, and we find that that the lowest excited state is at some value of k. At some point, it runs over to k equals 0, and then finally you have some sort of transition at j equals 0.8. and t equals 1, which is well in a regime where this particular relationship between the truncated model and the KLM model is not to be trusted. So this really is a small t expansion. The transition that we find here would occur for rather large values of t over j, so it's a model that would be quite different from the condo lattice model. But nonetheless, one could explore this analytically. The interesting thing is that way of constructing the C and the C and D electrons as composite operators, even though the Hamiltonian is trivial, the spectral weights in terms of the bare electron operators are really complicated because they are composite objects, but we can compute them. So in this case, we have a delta function peak that you would get from an ordinary Bogolyubov bulk transformation. But then we have a broad piece here that's really difficult to get out of approximate calculations. Here it comes because of we have complete control over the nonlinear terms in the composite given in the composite operator. So we can fulfill all the sum rules because it's an exact canonical transformation. So really the only approximation has been in the Hamiltonian. Okay, so I discussed a transformation where I decided ahead of time which permutation I was going to map into which. Now, those set of permutations generalize to a multi-parameter family of permutation of the generalized to a permit to a set of transformations that can be actually mapped with the particle hole transformation can be then followed by rotation in the singlet and similar half space. So it can actually be rotated to the identity transformation continuously. So we have a way of tuning through a set of canonical transformation from the identity transformation, which would be relevant when j equals 0, to the strict permutation that's relevant for large j. And we can see how that works by this pictogram. The SU2 rotation basically takes and maps between the spin 1/2 sectors. We have one SU2 rotation. This is not a spin rotation. It's formally an SU2 that maps these states pairwise. SU2 that maps these two. And then there's an SU3 that can rearrange the triplets as linear combinations of each other. And then another SU2 that maps these. And all of these transformations then are still in the category of being nonlinear, generating a Hamiltonian, but can be used as a variational parameter to possibly look for optimal ground states or whatever. So that means that an approximate free quasi particle model can be constructed that can describe at least this type of metal insulator transition, and this electron spectral weights can be computed exactly for these sets of models. So the conclusion then for the Kondo lattice model is that that we can, by this trick, we can map the model that's interacting in dense to a model that's interacting in dilute. And it's well controlled in the weak T over J limit. And the really important thing is that the bare electrons are naturally described as composite quasi-particle operators, which can then be solved analytically when we truncate this Hamiltonian. So at least this one can also note that this kind of transformation can be applied on a single site basis. For instance, if we have a single Kondo impurity, we can apply this mapping at the single site, leaving all the other electrons alone, in which case you might in which case some of the calculations that were discussed by Marco the other day might be fun to do using some of these. It might be generalized to having a free parameter where you tune for various values of J, that is the strength of the Kondo impurity. Okay, I'd like to just spend two more minutes and discuss to what extent this can be used for odd valence insulators. Now, the important thing, these canonical transformations have the property that they must preserve fermion parity. You have to, you cannot, the vacuum has the vacuum has an even number of particles, and we have to, in order to preserve the canonical commutation relations between sites, our polynomial has to be odd. Because even though we can fix up the commutation relations on a site, you have to be odd in order to keep it between sites. So a priori, it looks like there's nothing to do. We cannot do odd valence, because then we have to just map an odd valence site into a vacuum, which violates the odd even rule. However, you can construct exact non-canonical transformations by taking, for instance, in the Hubbard model, taking the creation and annihilation operators and constructing two classes of particles. There's two classes of operators, one a fermion and one is a strict boson. And it turns out that, which was at first rather surprising until one realizes you can do it systematically, that this particular trick of doing a nonlinear operation on a single site basis constructs a single fermion operator with completely correct anti-commutation relation, and this an SU2 operator constructed out of even polynomials of the creation annihilation operators, which obey SU2 algebra, and these commute exactly. So it looks like the kind of slave boson. It looks like a perfect setup where you have a single fermion and a spin per site for the Hubbard model. Now, you don't get anything for free, and the fact is that this transformation transforms actually to quasi-spin variables, where both spin and charge is encoded in the new fermions and the new spin operators. So I just want to point out then that some of these tricks, if you're willing to look at canonical transformations and use computer algebra to generalize to more complicated transformations than you might be used to, it is possible to take a look again at some of the models and reconsider what you can do with a low density expansion. This particular operation turns out that these new electron operators, or these new fermions, measure fermion parity rather than density. So they exactly diagonalize the Hubbard model. That becomes a chemical potential for the new fermions. However, the hopping becomes a mess. That's closely related to pseudo spin operators that have been introduced elsewhere. So the conclusions then, that I think it's an interesting topic to look at writing free electrons as non-perturbatively as operators of composite operators, and that these may be natural tools to study Mott insulators. And it also leads to exact non-unitary transformations for the odd valence that may have some use, but at least not use it first. At least they're a lot of fun, interesting to play with. So for those who are not scared of doing some mathematical calculations, manipulations using these is quite a lot of fun. So that concludes my talk.
May I ask what's the difference between this new nonlinear chemical transformation technique and the strong coupling expansion? The expansion in terms of the T over U? Or T over J in the condo, that is a problem.
Well, I don't know exactly how they did their strong coupling expansion, T over J, but they pulled out ground state energy. And I guess it was a diagrammatic expansion. I just didn't study that paper. However, here in this case, it coincides to T over J, but to go to higher order is really hard because then you're dealing with an interacting quantum problem. But if you're willing to truncate it, you've got the ground state energies to T over J to the fourth, but then you also have a set of expectation values. You can compute operators, correlation functions that you can't necessarily do in the T over J limit. So those calculations become very straightforward. I don't know how difficult they are. You can also do finite temperature here, which they're not able to do. That was a ground state calculation. So I would say that I compared the T over J or strong coupling extensions as a way of calibrating my calculation, but I think they're complementary.
You could do something with a single condo. And what about these old problems of two pairs of condo impurities? I mean, can you recover?
Well, I'm not sure. I've played a little bit with a single condo impurity.
And it's two condo impurities.
Yeah, well, even the single one has to be straightened out whether you lose the physics or not. And I'm not convinced you retain the correct physics if you truncate that to lowest order. I tried a little bit with that, and I don't. So you can do two also. What we really want to do is understand to what extent we retain our correlation physics by looking at the composite operators in a simple system, and to what extent we really do need an interacting Hamiltonian. So I would like to see an investigation of the single condo impurity using this. First, to see what kind of physics we retain. But
I just wonder what happened to IKKY and that.
Yeah. Well, again, in the limit where you can't identify a singlet, you need to identify a local ground state in order to do some mapping. So So if you're looking at the RKKY, I'm not sure I have anything to contribute.
Okay, good.